This morning's scripture reading is from the second chapter of Paul's letter to the church at Philippi. If then there is any encouragement in Christ, any consolation from love, any sharing of the Spirit, any compassion and sympathy, make my joy complete. Be of the same mind, having the same love, being in full accord and of one mind. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility regard others as better than yourselves. Let each of you look not to your own interest, but to the interests of others. Let the same mind be in you that was in Christ Jesus, who, though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but emptied himself, taking the form of a slave. Therefore, God also highly exalted him. Therefore, my beloved, just as you have always obeyed me, not only in my presence, but much more now in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you, enabling you both to will and to work for his good pleasure. Do all things without murmuring and arguing, so that you may be blameless and innocent. Children of God, without blemish, in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, in which you shine like stars in the world. It is by your holding fast to the word of life that I can boast on the day of Christ, that I did not run in vain or labor in vain.
This morning we're in week four of this marriage series we've been in, To Have and To Hold. And because it's Mother's Day, I thought it would be appropriate to have a very one-sided sermon this week. So the title of the message is What Your Wife Needs, What Your Wife Needs. Next Sunday we're going to balance that out with a sermon called What Your Husband Needs. But for this week we're just looking at one side of the equation. So we've been talking about what it takes to stay in love. And the other way to think about this message, the other thing you title is, what does a husband need to do to help his wife to stay in love with him? What are the biggest things a husband, typical husband, can do to improve his marriage? So three sections we're going to look at under three headings, which are all a little clunky and long, but oh well. First, we're going to talk about the duty and the difficulty of staying in love. Second, we're going to talk about the top unmet needs for most wives. And then third, we'll talk about what does this have to do with Christianity. So first, the duty and the difficulty of staying in love. Second, the top unmet needs for most wives. And then third and lastly, what does any of this have to do with Christianity? So first, the duty and the difficulty of staying in love. And there's a little bit of review here. I'm trying to hit the same note every week. One of the things we've been saying each week in the series is that staying in love is essential. The Bible talks about it as essential. You have to have that feeling. You have to have that spark. But the way the Bible talks about it is different than you might think. Because what we've said is that, yes, it's essential, but it's not out of your control. It's not a matter of chemistry. It's not just something that happens or it doesn't happen, and if I fall out of love, there's nothing I can do about it. Rather, staying in love is this thing that you can make happen by doing something very simple, which is meeting your spouse's needs. So take a look at this verse. This is kind of our theme verse for this week and for next week. This is from 1 Corinthians 7. Paul says this: "A man should fulfill his duty as a husband, and a woman should fulfill her duty as a wife, and each should satisfy the other's needs." It's a duty. It's a command in the Bible to satisfy your spouse's needs. And if you do that, you'll be in love. You know, we want to think of being in love as so mysterious. We also think of being in love as it's something that's all about the other person. You know, they're so wonderful. Really, being in love is just, if somebody meets all your needs, you're going to be in love with them. It's just human nature. And so if a husband meets his wife's needs, his wife's deepest needs, if he obeys this passage, the feelings of love will return. But what you see here is you see the Bible threading the needle between these two opposite views of marriage that are out there, both of which are wrong. So you have the traditional view of marriage, traditional culture, the kind of the moral law view, which is that marriage is this sacred contract between two people, and for the sake of the vows, for the sake of the kids, you have to stay married no matter what, whether you're happy or not, and your happiness doesn't matter. But then in reaction to that, you have kind of the Western Enlightenment individualist view, which says, no, your happiness is paramount. Staying in love is paramount. And if you're not happy, then you got to do what's best for you, and you got to get out. Well, the Bible takes the best of both of those and rejects the worst of both of those and says, yes, it's true. The feeling is important. You have to stay in love. But how do you stay in love? It's a duty. It's a command. You got to put in the work. So it still retains that duty element from the traditional moral view. The duty isn't to stay married. The duty is to stay in love by meeting your spouse's needs. That's the duty of staying in love. The difficulty in that, and we've alluded to it before, but I want to talk about it again this morning. The difficulty in meeting your spouse's needs is that you often don't actually know what your spouse's needs are. Because of the profound differences between men and women. And I know that for a lot of you, even just the fact that I'm carving it up like this, you know, that I'm doing 1 week on wives and 1 week on husbands, some of you, that's going to raise red flags, you know, because there are obviously big dangers to gender stereotypes. And I get those. The reason I'm doing this anyway is because as a pastor, it's been my experience that there is this remarkable ignorance about what separates men and women. Men just kind of have no idea what women are really looking for in a marriage, and women just have no idea what their husbands are really looking for in a marriage. So I'm dividing it up like this on purpose, even though I know there are dangers to the stereotypes, because I actually want to emphasize the divide. You know, you could say, well, why can't we just talk about spouses, you know, asexual, you know, just neutered, what all humans need. And the truth is there are some things that all humans need, but there's also differences between us. There's really real differences between us. I think women tend to think of their needs as just human needs. You know, they think that this is what everybody needs. And it's not necessarily what their husband needs. It's what they need as women. And for men, there's just a total cluelessness. They just have no idea. Freud said, the great question that has never been answered, in which I have not yet been able to answer, despite my 30 years of research into the feminine soul, is what does a woman want? And that's the way most guys are, just completely in the dark. And it should be obvious, but it's not. So I'm making this divide on purpose. I'm emphasizing the divide on purpose because we are different. And not only are we different, but going back to what we talked about in week one of this series, we're different by design. It says in Genesis that God designed us different on purpose. You remember we talked about that Hebrew word, which the roots of which are like and opposite. God made a helper like opposite Adam. Similar to him, but different. Exactly opposite. Perfectly opposite. So that like interlocking puzzle pieces, you complete one another. So there's a difficulty there. There's a real difficulty, this ignorance of not knowing what the other person really needs. And staying in love is going to be a matter of remedying that ignorance. And not only the ignorance, but we mentioned this in week one as well, the incompetence. Because once you figure out what your spouse needs, you realize, oh, I actually don't know how to do that. I don't know how to do what they want. And that's why you haven't been doing it. If you had known what they wanted and you had known how to do it, you would have been doing it all along. So not only is there ignorance, there's incompetence. And learning to stay in love is a matter of developing these skills, which take time. It's slow. You know, it's like learning to ride a bike. You fall down a lot. So a word to the wives, just as the second section is going to be kind of what are some of the top needs of women. And a word to the wives is, if your husband makes attempts in any of these areas, if they try, and let's say it's not a super elegant attempt, you know, let's say they kind of just butcher it. Well, if you're smart, you're not going to laugh at them. You're not going to reject that attempt. If you're smart, you're going to give them positive reinforcement and train them like a dog so that they want to try again. Because, again, going back to the view that a lot of women have, which is just that this is everybody's need, the other view that I've found a lot of women have is, if they really love me, they would just know how to do these things naturally. If they really loved me and really cared about me, they wouldn't have to try to do these things. They wouldn't have to work on these things. It just would be automatic and second nature. And that's just not the case. You're married to a man. And so it's going to be a matter of work and learning and developing skill, which means in your own best interest, you got to give the positive reinforcements and be patient. So that's the first section of the sermon, the duty and the difficulty of staying in love. It's a duty. You got to put in the work to stay in love, but there's also this difficulty of not knowing what the other person's needs are, and you got to learn, and you got to learn how to meet them. So now let's move on to section two, which is kind of the heart of the sermon in terms of content, the top unmet needs for most women. So when I say most, obviously, you know, backtracking what I said about stereotypes, obviously, these are generalizations. Doesn't apply across the board. Some of these things, you're going to be exactly flip-flop. You're, as a woman, maybe you're more like a typical man in one area, and your wife, or as a, your husband is more like a typical woman in one or two areas. So it's not true across the board. If it doesn't apply to you, fine. But in general, these are the top unmet needs for most women, most wives. And I won't have time to talk about three. I'd love to talk about five or six, but we're going to talk about three. The three are support, affection, and conversation. Support, affection, and conversation. So three subpoints to this second section. So first, support. The subtitle for that one is your wife needs support. Do the dishes and put the kids to bed. And by do the dishes, you know, I mean, it doesn't have to be literally do the dishes, but that's a good place to start. Well, really what we're talking about here is practical help in kind of making the family run and keeping the family together, all the logistics of that. It's interesting, you know, so there's a lot more gender equality in every area than there used to be. And so you have couples where both couples work full time, they may make the same amount of money, work the same hours, and they're supposed to share the housework equally. And study after study has shown that it just never happens. The wife always does way more of not just the chores, but taking care of the kids and kind of the administrative duties of making the family run, even if she works longer hours and makes more money than her husband. And what's even better than that is that, so not only have they found objectively that's undoubtedly true, they also, in surveys, the men always say that they're doing 50%. They always think they're doing 50%. So if you ask, you know, the husband and the wife, how much, what percentage do you do, it always adds up to more than 100. Which, and so one of the two is lying, and it's usually the man. So then the question is why? Why do men think they're doing a higher percentage of the work than they really are? There's only two logical possibilities. One is that they overestimate how much they're doing. So they think, I did, you know, 10 hours of work for the family last week, and they only did four. Well, that's kind of unlikely because they were there. They know how much work they did, so they might overestimate by a little bit, but they're not going to overestimate by a lot. So the other possibility is that they just grossly underestimate how much their wife is actually doing because they're not there for it. They don't see it. And so they don't get it. You know, even when this phrase I used earlier when I said, you know, the business of kind of keeping the family running, for most men, I think that phrase is just kind of like a black hole. And, you know, you think, well, it's pretty simple, right? Like, there's just a couple things, and, you know, it's basic. And for most women, when you hear that phrase, they think of five things they have to do tonight, before tomorrow, just to keep all the ships in line. And so there's this inequality, and the first thing it comes down to for meeting your wife's needs and staying in love is just offering support practically. Because if she's just so exhausted that, you know, she can't even function just from the grind, then there's not really much else that can be done. She's not going to be able to receive anything else you have to offer her. And this applies to taking care of the kids as well. So there's a difference between parenting and taking care of the kids or child care. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you have young kids, a lot of having kids is just keeping them alive. It's just this grind of keeping them fed and bathed and doctor's appointments and making them sleep. And what dads tend to do, you know, so again, with the gender equality thing, men somehow find a way to spin this to their advantage. And so they're like, oh, we're supposed to be equal as parents now. So for men, the way that nets out is, okay, so I get to have an opinion now. You know, I'm going to give my two cents about how we're raising our kids, which on big stuff, fine. But on little stuff, what it ends up is that the guy just comes in and just creates stress. You know, I've seen this a lot where dads actually undermine the moms in terms of the child rearing. And, you know, she's saying to the kid, you got to eat your vegetables. And the dad's saying, oh, it's okay. And there's fun parts of parenting, and then there's not so fun parts of parenting. And dads tend to gravitate to the fun parts and leave the not so fun parts for the mom. And that's not cool. That's just really not cool. So this is something that you do not for your kid. It's not an investment in your relationship with your kid. It's an investment in your relationship with your wife to take some of that pressure off by supporting whatever she wants to do, because she's got a program. And it's time that you got with it. It's time that you kind of got in line with whatever she's trying to do and supported her in the way that she wants to parent your kids. Again, I'm not talking about big picture philosophical stuff. If you want to have those conversations, great. And dad should be involved in those conversations. I'm talking about in the nitty gritty of trying to get stuff done. Just keep your mouth shut and do what she asks you to do. So that's the first section of the sermon, is that the top unmet need of a lot of wives today, especially in New York, is just they need support. They just are worn down. They are ragged, and they just need somebody to come alongside and help lift the burden. That's number one. Number two, the second unmet need of a lot of wives is affection. Affection. And the subtitle here is hold her hand and tell her you love her. So this is kind of, you know, more stereotypical and sappy. And again, as a man, I don't even like talking about this. Like, it just feels like, ugh. But that's the problem, you know? That's kind of the point. That's why we have problems. So holding hands, you know, what we're talking about there is non-sexual touch, non-sexual physical contact. And there has to be that. Next week, we're going to talk about sex, which for most men is high on their list of needs. And that's not to say that women don't need sex, don't want sex, don't desire sex. Of course they do. But for most marriages, in some marriages you have a woman that has a greater desire for sex than the man. But in most marriages, the man has a greater desire for sex. The woman has a greater desire for prior to sex, as a context for sex, non-sexual touch. Affectionate touch, hugging and kissing and cuddling that's not sexual in any way and doesn't lead to sex. You know, it may lead to sex the next night or the night after that, but doesn't lead to sex that night. And most men just have no interest in that. You know, it's just those activities are seen only as foreplay, only as kind of like to set the stage for the main event and not as ends in themselves. But that's not how most women feel about it. And one of the top complaints of women is that he only touches me when he wants sex. So it's got to change. You know, as guys, we have to learn how to give that affection that's totally separate from sex and doesn't have any sexual component to it. And again, it's a learned trait because for a lot of guys, it's not even possible to do that without becoming sexually aroused. But part of that is just that you don't even think to do it until you want sex. You know, you got to think about her. You got to do it when you have no interest in it yourself, but just because it's something that's important to her. So there's a physical component to affection, hold her hand. And then there's also a verbal component to affection, just telling her how you feel. You know, and I think guys can tend to be like, well, you know, she knows how I feel. Well, no, she doesn't. So I want to read you these words. In the 90s, there was this blockbuster romantic comedy, Notting Hill, with Hugh Grant and Julia Roberts. And the big song from the soundtrack was this song that kind of gets at this idea of, oh, you don't have to say it. And the song is called When You Say Nothing at All. So it says this: it's amazing how you can speak right to my heart. Without saying a word, you can light up the dark. Try as I may, I could never explain what I hear when you don't say a thing. The smile on your face lets me know that you need me. There's a truth in your eyes saying you'll never leave me. The touch of your hand says you'll catch me whenever I fall. You say it best when you say nothing at all. So the irony of this song, which is about the superfluity of words, is that it's a song that's made up of words. So why is it not an instrumental piece? You know, self-refuting. It's completely self-refuting. And if you're moved by the words of the song, like, yeah, that's good. Well, the words are words. So you have to use words. You have to express how you feel about your wife with words. And the Song of Songs, you know, you see this. And again, it's just sappy. It's totally over the top. But this marriage manual in the book of the Bible, the husband and the wife are just showering praise on one another. I want to read you some of these compliments just because they're interesting looking back 3,000 years later. So this is from the Song of Songs. He says, "How beautiful you are, my love. How your eyes shine with love behind your veil. Your hair dances like a flock of goats bounding down the hills of Gilead. Your teeth are white. Not one of them is missing. They're all perfectly matched. Your lips are like a scarlet ribbon. How lovely they are when you speak. Your cheeks glow behind your veil. Your neck is like the Tower of David, round and smooth with a necklace around it. Your breasts are like twin gazelles, twin deers feeding among the lilies.